accession number 210-61, Wheel 1.
Sid Kevin, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Mortlake.
Which year was this?
That's Surrey then. It was Surrey then, which is now London.
Which year were you born?
15th of the 5th, 1924.
Did both your mother and father come from Mortlake?
No, my mother came from Mortlake, but my father came from Beccles, which is Norfolk.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Mortlake?
Oh yes, all my schooling was in Mortlake.
Which schools did you go to there?
Mortlake Central School.
How old were you when you finished there?
I was 14 when I finished school.
In 1938?
Yeah.
Did you join TA before the war?
No, no.
Did you get a job when you left school?
Oh yes, I got a job and I was at a flour mills for a very few months. But then I went to school of building Brixton and learn architecture, and I've done practical and theory in building trade, which is Ferndale Road, Brixton.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
Yes, that was what I was doing.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Oh yes, yes, definitely.
How did you feel about the news?
How did I feel about the news? Well, after that, we went up to, don't forget, I was only 15 and a half years of age then, and we went up to the sweet shop, which we did, and someone buy a few cigarettes, and we used to meet up there, and all of a sudden, we were shushed out of the sweet shop and told to go in because the air raid siren had gone, and she shut her shop, the little lady shut her shop, and off we went home, and my father then, being an experienced man in the First War, he sealed all the windows and the doors, and he said, if gas should be, we should get a gas attack, then seal the chimney and make sure we come into this room. And he's very emphatic about that. He was wounded in the First War, and that was his outlook on war. But then the all clear went, and we all went out in the streets. Everybody gathered out in the streets, and they talked and talked. And someone said, well, you're too young for war. You'll be going to a munitions factory.
Did you go?
Oh, no, no, no. I carried on doing my routine, daily work, etc., and going to school, night school, that isn't day school, you know, weekends. And used to go in the local pub. Yeah, as we got on, we got led in as young. So I was a very good footballer, in fact. I used to play cricket. I was a good sportsman. I represented a school, and I represented a few boroughs at football. He was a young man.
Were you in any bombing of England by the German Air Force?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yeah. We were in a bombing, yes, definitely, yeah.
Can you describe it for me?
Well, I never used to bother about it, really. In fact, I used to lay in bed, and that's it. And of course, I had to do air raid duty as a warden, more or less, help out in that in case of. But it was just going there and more or less incendiary bombs, case incendiary bombs. But I never contacted any incendiary bombs, and that was it. I was just there on duty.
What was your address during the blitz?
24 West Road, Mortlake.
Did many bombs fall in Mortlake?
No, no. There was some. One bomb, a very heavy bomb, fell on Clifford Avenue in Mortlake. And that was partly let off, and first of all they tried to distinguish it, and it was just let off.
How far away from you was that?
That was about 600 yards up there.
So the bombing didn't frighten you?
No, it didn't frighten me, no. No. I still, as I said, I was pretty fit, and it didn't frighten me. We used to see the air raids and things.
And you never used shelters?
I remember once, No, I never used shelter at all. I remember once being in Brockley. I was we were doing some war damage at the fronts of these houses, and I remember a Nazi plane coming down the street down at Brockley, and all of a sudden I had a bit of bravado about me, and I flung myself over a child because they come spraying the bullets down the street.
Do you know which street in Brockley that was?
No, it's a main street. I know there's a main street. And that's it.
Was anybody hit by the bullet?
I don't know. They wouldn't know. No, I know the child wasn't hit. And that's it.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing in London?
Very good. You went about your normal day. And there was no such thing as saving money then. You seemed to enjoy yourself better in those days. You went into a pub. If you had a half a crown, you had a half crown, and that was it. And not forgetting that beer was fourpence a pint then. And, you know, we seemed to enjoy our sport as we could, as a civilian it was. And we were just awaiting call-up.
Did you listen to wireless in those days?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
What would you listen to?
I'd listen to all programmes, really, all programmes. My father was used to sit there at the table and he listened to the radio. And but I was out mainly playing sport, quite frankly. We used to organise our own running races and football, and we'd kick a football till it came apart at the seams.
Would you listen to any VIP speeches?
Not really, no, no. I used to listen to perhaps Henry Hall and all this sort of business. At I think it was 5:15 in the evening. He used to stutter, "This is Henry Hall speaking," and play, you know, his music.
Any
and
time?
Sunday mornings we used to listen to the radio, you see. And
can you tell me about joining up, please?
Joining up. Well, we used to gather in a pub in those days, and I remember a friend of mine, Bill Connors, we used to gather in the eaves. He was going into the RAF. And I was going to the army, and all of a sudden one would come up, he was in 1942, and said, Bill came in, and he said, I've got me calling up papers, and he's going to the RAF, and suddenly I got my call, very late 42, I got my calling up papers, and I was assigned to go to York, Fulford Barracks, York, in the King's Royal Rifle Regiment. And I had about 6 weeks with the King's Royal Rifle Regiment. And while I was there, I volunteered for the Parachute Regiment.
What kind of training did you have with the KRR?
Just running around, and not a lot of training, just running around a football field and getting to know weapons and things like that, and gas drill and things.
What?
And when I finished training then, I went to the East Surrey Regiment, which is at Moulton, in Yorkshire. From there, first of all, before Moulton in Yorkshire, I went to Canterbury. I should have mentioned that. It was there I met Lieutenant the Right Honourable Paul Greenway, and we were talking. He was a lieutenant and I was a private soldier then, and I told him I'd volunteered for the Parish Regiment. He said, "So have I." And suddenly I was posted. He was in the Buffs, by the way, which is a twin regiment of the East Surrey Regiment. From there, I went up to Moulton, Yorkshire. From there, after a brief period there, which was not very good training, we went down to Uckfield, Sussex, and I was pretty fit. I would not fall out of any training. I'll consider myself as fit as any sergeant major, come what may. And it was at Uckfield, Sussex, I got my calling up papers for the Parachute Regiment. That was in 1943.
Why had you wanted to go to the Parachute Regiment?
I wanted to be up in the air. I was colour blind and I couldn't go into the RAF. And I wanted to do something positive in the war. And I went up to, from Uckfield, I went to Chesterfield. And we did our training at Chesterfield, which is salt courses, and you were not allowed to walk. You double, double, double. It was double everywhere. The only time you're allowed to walk was back from a meal. And it was assault courses. And I remember one, we went around there, which was full pack, and some dropped out, and they were RTU'd, which had returned to unit. And I remember doubling on the spot on the parade ground after this run, and this sweat was pouring off me, and all of a sudden, back to your Nishanuts, back to my Nishanuts, and I threw my kit onto the bunk bed. But I passed me assault courses, I passed all preliminary training for the parish regiment at Chesterfield, and then it was good to go to Ringway and do your jumps, which is six balloon jumps then, and six plane jumps, aeroplane jumps, and two balloon jumps. The first jump was from a balloon, which is Tatton Park, Manchester. And you went up 800 feet with a cage below, and this cage was like a barrel with hessian round the side. And we got up there. There was a platform with an aperture in the bottom with a bar across where they hooked you on, with a D where they hooked you on. And all of a sudden, I was never afraid of heights, and all of a sudden the balloon stopped, and I looked down over the side. I said, "What's happened? Why are we stopped?" He said, "We're there and you're the first." That's told me to not be so cocky. So that was it. He seemed to keep me a long time on the edge of the... He seemed to keep me a long time on the edge of the aperture. And then all of a sudden, go! And your feet, you seem to go at an angle. Like that, your head down, your feet there, you see. And I went out, and suddenly I felt myself completely the wrong way, my head facing the ground, and I chose a few choice words, swear words, and suddenly someone was holding me up. I looked up, it was a chute, the greatest feeling ever. But I came down to a good landing, fairly good landing. You hit the ground hard, you see. And don't forget, when you drop from a balloon, your chute doesn't open until 120 feet because it's static, you see. So out of the 800 feet, you fall 120 feet before your chute opens. But with an aircraft, it's different. The slipstream takes you away, and it opens quicker. But I did my two jumps, one at night, one day, one night in a balloon. Then I did six aircraft drops out of the Whitley bomber, which was, we used to call it the coffin. It used to look like a coffin with that aperture in the bottom.
Do you have any problems learning to parachute jump?
No, I was quite good at it. I was very good at it, in fact, because my reports were good too. I was very fortunate in that I wasn't in one plane, which was a plane previous to me, because there was a chappie called Private Dixon, and he jumped out, and the plane caught an air pocket, and his chute got caught up in the tail of the plane, and he plummeted to death. But a lot of people were RTU'd and sent back the units, they're afraid of heights, and they volunteered for the parachute regiment, which is silly. And they were told in no uncertain way, it cost £800 to train a parachutist in those days. And the instructor would said, if you're thinking you're in it for glory, then off. He swear at you, off. But I went right through the training, I got a good report, which I've got here, and when you accept your wings, you stand there and you accept your wings. Don't forget those that pass. And they turn up, but before you're accepting your wings, he said, right, if once you've accepted your wings, if you refuse to jump, you get 84 days detention and sent back to unit. And this went up to 112, I think it was, days. I accepted my wings. I was proud. And I was then sent to Burford. It was a rainy night. And I came, stood outside the Nishnats, ready to be greeted by the acting adjutant, it was then. And who should be the acting adjutant was Lieutenant the Right Honourable Paul Greenway, who had volunteered at the same time, more or less, as me. And he said, oh, well done. He shook my hands and he said, is there any friends you want to be with? And I said, yes, there's a chap called Stan Pepper. And he sent us both to C Company, the 9th Battalion Parachute Regiment. We don't forget we were at the 9th Battalion Parachute Regiment, but this was the company sent us both to the same company. In those days, we got 2 shillings a day jumping money. But we got 6 months a day proficiency for one thing, 6 months a day for another. So that was a lot of money, 21 shillings a week, which represented 42 pints of beer. In today's prices, that's a lot of money, far better than they are today. You try and describe, people say 2 shillings a day, but you talk to them and put it in terms of beer, which I used to like a drink, but I was slim. Don't worry, I was slim then, I'm fit. And that was a lot of money.
So where were the battalion, where was C Company when you joined it?
The company were at Burford, Salisbury, near Salisbury.
What happened to you next?
What happened to me next? We were training. We used to do marching, running. And I remember one officer on training, you'd go out, he'd make sure he had no money, and he used to take you out on the way out in the country. But he would take a platoon of men. There was a Captain Robinson, he was the second in command. My company commander was Major Dyer, who later got the Croix de Guerre. And Robbie would say, right, 32 pints of beer, and on your way. Always 32 pints of mild. No beer in those days like that. You know, 32 pints of mild on your way. But another officer, which was Gordon Brown, he would buy your beer after you'd done your exercise, more or less. And you'd find your own way back to camp. You had to find your own way back to camp, out from the wild, you know. And there we are. And it seemed a long time, I thought to myself, what's happening? We don't seem to be seeing any action. And suddenly, 43 went past, 44 came, and it was about April 44, we were taken to a place called Inkpen, and we were all under canvas. And from Inkpen, well, near Inkpen it was, West Woodhay, but we were taken to Inkpen, which was right close to West Woodhay, and in this field, was four, like, gun emplacements. It was scaffolding covered with camouflage. They were spaced out. It represented four guns. And we trained day and night with blanks. And my job was, I was in 12 Platoon C Company. And my company commander was still Ian Dyer, but my platoon commander was Alan Jefferson, Lieutenant Jefferson, who was a bit of a ballet dancer, etc. And it was 32 men to a platoon, and we were to take number one gun. 13 platoon was to take number two gun, 14 platoon to take number three gun, and a made-up platoon from HQ to take number four gun. That's the C Company, it was the assault company. Before the assault, B Company was to blow the wire, right, which surrounded the battery. Don't forget we were attacking the guns from the rear, and we were dropped. It was to be about a mile and a quarter mile and a half behind the guns, etc. And and A Company, they then trained 50 men. It was called the GB Force. This is Gordon Brown, which I told you about, Captain Gordon Brown. They were to be a coup de main force, which to land, three gliders, to land on the rear of the battery. and perhaps take the battery. And there were skull and crossbone men. And it was a selection of men from A Company.
What do you mean, skull and crossbone men?
Coup de main force. They had skull and crossbones, but they were later taken off. And they were to land on the battery by gliders, three gliders. We were to lay and wait for them, and perhaps not have to attack the battery. And not forgetting, you attack from the rear. I've got to go into number one gun, 32 men. 32 in a number two gun, 32 number three, 32 number four gun. Then we thought we got it perfection, and each man was brainwashed. Jefferson would say to me, "What's your job?" I said, "I'm a part of number 12 platoon, 32 men to attack number one gun." And I always, in those days, shouted zigzag and shouted, "Bastards, bastards, bastards," to build up hatred. You've got to build up hatred. When you take that gun, the engineers have got to come down and blow them. You get the prisoners, and that's it. I thought that was, after 48 hours, I'd be back in England. And we later learned that that was to be our job. It was Merville in Normandy. But I'm talking now about from Merville, we're supposed to go on to Solonelles, which is a radar station, and then on to La Plan. And I thought that'd be my lot and back to England. But each man had to describe. And Jefferson would say, "Well, what would you do when you land on the DZ, the dropping zone?" I said, "I'd see which way the aircraft went away from me. And I'd go right to the aircraft, the fuselage, and there I'll be met by pathfinders who are directly to the RV. It's a rendezvous." So, want to stop there now?
Carry on.
From, of course, we trained, we done our training, then came to June the 4th, and we were under canvas waiting to go to Normandy. And it was a rainy night, it was a terrible night. And we went to him bus, and all of a sudden, it's all off, 24 hours. The next day, next morning, it was a beautiful day, and I thought to myself, "Oh, good God, it would have been all over by now." Not forgetting we got to land, drop 30 hours before the main invasion force. And we had to silence those guns before the seaborne landings. They were a danger to the seaborne landings. So the next morning was a beautiful morning. That was the 5th. And on the evening of the 5th, we were taken to the aerodrome. And there was a Dakota. And we sat around, equipment check, you know, make sure all our gear was all right, and put as much ammunition as you could carry without being a burden to yourself, as many grenades as you could. But if you overladen yourself, that's it, you could be a burden on yourself. So it came to the evening, I suppose it must have been about 10:30, something like that, to emplane. And we emplaned and we sat around. And then it was taxied along the runway there, and off we went. We were airborne. None of us going to die. We're all brave men. We're not going to die. And we're talking about 650, about approximately 650 men in a battalion. And he said, 20 minutes to go, it's call for equipment check, and each man would check the equipment of the man in front of me, shoot, etc. And it'd be onto the strong point, his shoot would be onto the strong point, the deer, the strong point. And then it didn't seem long, that 20 minutes to go. Then it said, "We're approaching the coast of France." And as we approached the coast of France, the German ACAT came up at us. And it, you could see the amber glows, and it threw the plane from in a turmoil, and others were thrown from port to starboard. And don't forget, you've got to go in a turn left and go that way, because you've got to go in a circle to get back again and go onto your DZ. And before he could regain composure, it was said, "Get to the doors, red light, green light, go!" And I fell out like a ruddy sack of coal. But I had a beautiful landing, the best ever landing I've ever had. I landed in a field right near a hedgerow with a road running parallel and a dwelling opposite. I wasn't interested in a dwelling. You was always taught is only one objective. No private battles, and that's Merville. And I released my chute. I felt most dejected. There was nobody around. I saw the plane go around along, away from us. And all of a sudden, one parachute came down about 2 or 3 yards from me. And off we went. We took the cover of the hedgerow. Then we met another chap. Then off we went. There was 3 of us now. Then we carried on about another 100 yards, and we met a Lieutenant Dowling from B Company. Lieutenant Dowling, B Company. Now, they're the ones that are going to blow the wire, etc., with Bangalore torpedoes. He had about six blokes with him, and he was trying to find his bearings. He was slaying his stinger nettles. So now we're about a section strength, about 10 men in strength. And all of a sudden, we found our bearings, and out of 650, we were on the DZ, the dropping zone. So off we went, and we laid along a hedge, another hedgerow, which is a continuation of the hedgerow which we'd taken cover from. And a lorry came with some Germans on it, but we laid and hid in the hedgerow, not forgetting no private warfare. If you engage in private warfare, it could deter the capture of the gun battery. And we went across this narrow road, and there on the incline was a pathfinder. So it directed us to the RV, which is a rendezvous where 650 men supposed to have gathered. When we got there, it was about, I would say, about two platoons, about 60-odd men. Gradually, this increased to 150 men. And I would not like to be in an odd way shoes to make decisions then. He had to make a decision. He's got 150 men out of 600 odd men. And he had to make a decision. Afterwards, later on, I said to him, "What made you decide to advance?" He said, "It wasn't me, it was Wilson, the batman." He said, "I don't know what I'm going to do, Wilson." He said, "There's only one thing, sir." And that was it. He said, "That gave me the incentive to carry on." So we went across a field. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning, we're talking about now, to go down to Merville. There was some maddened cattle. That's the only thing that we come across, some maddened cattle. They went berserk. Then we got to the perimeter of the battery, and we laid there, and we could see the battery in front of us, the four guns, four large concrete emplacements. They're impregnable from the aircraft. And suddenly we were waiting the gliders, you see. And I thought, well, I might not have to go in. And we're talking about now about 4 o'clock in the morning, just after four to our pass. One doesn't. I wasn't worried about time. I wasn't worried about people, how many men you'd count in people. All of a sudden, one glider appeared, and it was 11 o'clock position, way beyond number four gun. That was out of range, it was useless. That next thing, the glider came, it hovered around, another glider, it hovered around over the battery. I thought myself, this is going to land on there. And suddenly, the tracer bullets from the German gun from where I lay to the right, it came and tracer bullets entered it, and that landed at 7 o'clock position way behind us. No good at all, and that must have been about 400 or 500 yards away, I suppose. And I later learned that was Pond, Hugh Pond's glider. The third glider never arrived. They landed back in England. The tow bar broke and it landed back in England. But they sent those blokes out the same day. One of those chaps was Arthur Mobsby. So it now came, we've got to attack the gun. Instead of 32 men, don't forget we've got 150, but Otway turned round and said, we've got to attack now and take these guns. They blew the wire, B Company blew the wire with the Bangalore torpedoes, which we didn't have much of, but I wasn't interested in that. That was their job. My job was to attack, be a part of number one gun, 32 men. So instead of 32 men, there's about seven of us laid there. Don't forget he had to keep some in reserve. And the 32 men, out of 32 men, to my left was Mike Dowling, who was never assigned to attack number two gun. He was B Company, not C Company. And he had a similar amount of men. To my right was Alex.